Welcome to the little red barn, where we're bouncing off the walls like a squirrel on meth with coffee to spare. We're racing through farm talk with energy to share. From tractors to livestock, we jump topic to topic, faster than a combine at harvest time. So buckle up, friends, and hold on tight. The Little Red Barn Podcast starts now.
On this episode of the Little Red Barn Podcast that starts right now, we've got several things that we want to talk through. It's been an interesting week here in Indiana, Eastern Corn Belt, Great Lakes area. We want to talk a couple of local happenings here this past week. The redistricting effort that you heard our guest Mike Thompson allude to a little bit in last week's podcast, that came before the Indiana legislature and a vote was held. Lots of interesting things coming out of that. We're going to talk weather a little bit here, which Mother Nature has been damn near bipolar here recently. We're going to talk about USDA, several different things there. $12 billion worth of aid evidently coming toward you, me, and everybody else. Also, WASDE report out this past week. Markets are trying to digest what's going on in China. There's a lot of headlines. This is going to be an episode where we just kind of pop back and forth and try and hit a little bit on all sorts of headlines. Call it a weekly catch up, if you will. But as we get closer and closer to the holidays, it seems like there's more and more things to catch up on, including Christmas shopping. If you're joining us here for the Little Red Barn, you know that I have a co-host. His name is Mr. Charlie Huyen, Huyen Grain Farms, Bremen, Indiana. Charlie, interesting weekend of this past weekend.
There was several times that we ended harvest a little bit early with a snowball fight.
Yeah. Look, we didn't get a lot of snow up this way, but it just seemed like it was always there, you know, just a little bit, just enough to make you go, pack it in till tomorrow.
Yeah, it was exactly like that, just enough to hang up on those stalks. And I noticed that it seemed to be that lake effect band that's sitting right over that red combine that we have out in the field. Yeah. And I'm like, boy, you know, if you could just go visit our friends in La Porte, that would be fine.
Well, they got some, though, Charlie, later on in the weekend and into, well, it's actually here starting this week as well. Strong, more west than northwest winds, La Porte, South Bend, and especially Berrien County in Michigan, all the way up to almost Grand Rapids. They did get those lake effect bands to shift. So hopefully this week, you'll be able to try and get back in there.
You know, we just keep on reeling it out the best we can, depending on when we're able to get out there.
Okay, so stalks are holding up for you?
Yeah, that fungicide treatment I made back in July, actually, I'm going like, wow, I'm glad we did that.
So you're cutting through basically tree trunks on the corn stalks.
We got tree trunks.
Yeah. So corn stalks are holding in. Are the yield? Well, my wife even, because we had a basketball game on Saturday morning up Trinity School at Greenlawn, and so we were driving that US 31 area all the way up into the heart of South Bend. Still saw fairly decent amount of corn sitting out there. My wife asked me, she goes, well, is the quality okay? I mean, so your stalk health is holding in. Are yields holding in? And are you seeing any issues with grain quality now the longer this corn sits out there?
I was looking at the trucks that we were unloading earlier, late in the week, and boy, I'm just not seeing, I'm seeing really good quality coming out of this corn crop still. Mm-hmm. It looks really good. The yields are still way high.
Okay.
We're talking some record yields here yet going on in our farm anyway, as we're wrapping up the corn harvest.
Oh, good. I mean, I'm glad it's going well for you that way. Again, I think you made some good headway this past week. The number of acres that were still standing on that drive into South Bend, that I honestly don't think I'd made that drive since back earlier in the basketball season when we had to play another South Bend school, and there were less acres out now than what there were back then. So that's one thing here. I think we're making some fairly significant progress. I know that you are, but let's just kind of roll through it here this week, hit some of these headlines, kind of talk through, just gab a little bit. And let's start with that Indiana State House redistricting vote. Redistricting went down this past week.
Yeah, I noticed that. That was a big discussion on our farm with the discussion with my parents who are involved with Farm Bureau.
Right.
It was kind of interesting their standpoint. They go, do you realize with this redistrict map, where we farm in Marshall County, that we would have to be dealing with and competing with the interests of Chicago, basically.
So you would have been shoved out of District 2 into District 1?
Into District 1, into the Chicago area, Lake area, Gary.
Lake County, Porter County. Well, shoot, throw the Port County in there. Michigan City all the way over, right?
Over. So we would be stuck competing with the interest of those folks when we are definitely rural and completely different mindset from where we are currently. And I think Senator Denario up there in Elkhart County, he said it best when he goes, you know, when you look at it, Elkhart County was going to be divided in two. It came down to the mentality of the people in these districts.
Right. Well, and Blake Dorio, look, you mentioned him talking about Elkhart County. I've had a lot of fights with Senator Dorio over the years. He and I do not necessarily line up eye to eye on everything. And look, that's fine. But I think it's interesting that you brought up interests of you and Marshall County and the interests of that East Chicago, Northwest Indiana area. It's interesting, though, that comes up as a topic of discussion, because I feel like the big rebuttal to that would be, well, you're lumped in with a lot of other like-minded people like yourself, because the only way that the district goes the way that this redistricting should go, and let's be blunt and honest with it was try to get all ours in the state of Indiana for U.S. House. But the only way that happens if you have enough that will vote on the conservative side versus others. So I would have thought that even with your mindsets being different, there's enough others like you in that newly redrawn District 1 that would overshadow the ones up there.
Yeah, I just didn't think that was going to be – it was going to be harder to get my legislators' attention.
That one I can believe.
You're not going to get somebody that's going to be focused in that Chicago area to come down to Marshall County to ride in the combine with you. There's just not going to be that quality of representation than what we get from Yoakum.
Well, and the other thing that I was thinking about, you know, and Senator Dorio, the way he said his statement, I think says a lot. We're supposed to have a representative government. Our government is supposed to be representative of the people, especially when it comes down to your congressional districts. And honestly, I think this redistricting, all of this would go away if, and Mike Thompson again brought this up last week. He is 100% right. And nobody is saying that he's wrong at all in saying that this has been going on in other states and probably against the way Indiana thinks on the whole. This has been going on in other blue states for quite some time. I think the idea that, well, we should do it too then, I don't think that's right, but it's going on. So if we would get back to true representative government, then everybody has a voice. Your congressman represents you in your constituency and your district. And the only way that happens is if we allow geographically things to happen the way they should, and it has to happen on both sides of the aisle. That's the big thing I have. What I actually thought was even bigger surprise, and honestly, it made me chuckle until I realized just how screwed up things are becoming. You follow the Notre Dame football program?
Oh, I love it when they lose.
Yeah, me too. My favorite teams are...
I got my Purdue hat on.
Yeah, my favorite teams are Purdue and whoever's playing Notre Dame. Unless that is IU. If IU's playing Notre Dame, I really hope that, you know, there's an earthquake and the field falls apart. Nobody killed, of course, but, you know, just that should
lightning storms work just
right,
fine.
And lightning storms, whatever. But so the old news in the Notre Dame football program this past week is they're taking their ball and going home. They're whining and crying and, oh, you left us out of the program, the playoff way. Miami hopped us. Oh, this is awful. I'm going to take my ball and go home. And I don't know about your workplace environment. You've got the family farm. You've got your hired guys. But I know in my workplace environments, and I talked at several different farmer meetings this past week, groups of farmers, and the number one topic of discussion was Notre Dame and how much their fans, and they are just obnoxious, and this whole take your ball and go home thing is ridiculous.
I've seen it ever since I was a part of that Purdue football program, how obnoxious those fans can be and how whiny they can be, how whiny the players can be and the staff. And the one thing I told my boys, we were talking about it over a discussion about whiny people and how you should just
Do you have lots of discussions about whiny people?
Sometimes we have to have that all where I'm going like, you know what? You just need to suck it up and get the job done. You got to do your homework too. Is I made the point to him. I go, hey, look, you know, there's a Notre Dame program that kind of thumbed their nose at everybody and said, I'm not going to go to the bowl game. I go, there's a Purdue football team sitting down in Lafayette that would love to go to a bowl game.
Sure. Sure. But they don't deserve to. The Purdue program, and look, they're making some strides. I'm not going to sit here and bash on my alma mater, but they sucked. Absolutely sucked.
They got some work to do.
They're awful. They sucked almost as bad as the basketball team did when they were ranked number one and went into
wherever, Iowa State.
Yeah, Iowa State and laid that egg. Oh, good God. That was just awful.
And Mackey.
But anyway, it's the reason why we bring this up is because going back to this redistricting thing, the fearless leader of the United States weighs in. And honestly, some PACs, the Heritage Group, Heritage Committee, Heritage Foundation, whatever the heck it is, was weighing in before the vote in Indiana. The vote was on Thursday and basically was saying, you know, if Indiana doesn't pass this redistricting, the feds need to pull out. Your roads aren't going to get paved. Your people aren't going to get taken care of. We're going to blah, 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 blah. Charlie, what's different? And well, even the president said afterwards, he's very disappointed and he's going to support anybody in the primary that runs against anybody that didn't vote on this redistricting bill. And if you looked at the senators that didn't vote for it on the Republican side, there are some in our backyard. There are folks here that, I mean, I know them. I've talked with them. I've had dinner with them. And you have too. So I find it very interesting that the administration is basically coming at this and pulling a Notre Dame.
Absolutely.
We're going to whine and take our ball and go home.
And not only are they being whining about this, it's that you have some high-ranking people in the Republican Party that voted against this and legitimately did.
Yeah. You know, I don't know. I don't know where this goes, and the only reason it's a topic of discussion, I'm not going to sit here and say whether I think, well, I think we have rules for redistricting, rules that have been in place for a good long time. And, you know, I don't think that just because the president wants it is a good enough reason to change the rules sometimes. So, I mean, that's just Ryan Martin's thoughts. You can skewer me how you want. Mike Thompson, again, raised a very good point, and I can see the argument. I can see both sides. But the vote happened, and everything now that's happened since the vote, that's what I abhor. If the vote would have went positive, it's like, oh, well, you know, maybe I didn't think of it in this way, but it is what it is. But the whole take your ball and go home. We're going to pull funding, this, that, and the other. Charlie, it does not bode well for the future of this country, any industry, if you're going to approach business, the business of life, the business of governing with the my way or the highway, take my ball and go home. It doesn't bode well for future of anything we do, does it?
I don't think it does. I think it takes away a lot of negotiation power. I think it takes away from the foundation of what our whole society has been built upon. The whole reason why we have the districts we are is for representation. We understand that people in the Chicagoland area have a different opinion from what downtown Bremen is. It's
and they're entitled to have that opinion.
And they are legitimately entitled to that opinion.
Where we end up balking a little bit is when that different opinion comes in to where I live and tells me what I have to do. But yet at the same time, look, listen to what I just said. Where I bristle at things is where somebody with a different opinion comes in and tells me what I have to do. And what did I just describe? I described what just happened this past week. Somebody outside the state of Indiana, groups of people, Heritage Foundation, not in Indiana, coming in and telling Indiana what you have to do. Nobody likes that.
No, and that's not going to sit well with the Hoosiers of Indiana.
Well, and if you flip it around, if we had a completely different administration, completely different color in office, and they came in and tried to tell Indiana what to do, would there have been some whining? Some scream, not whining, screaming against it?
I think there would be an all-out fight against it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I don't know. I just don't feel necessarily very pleased with the conservative arm of our political system right now in their reactions to what Indiana did this past week. Right, wrong, or indifferent, what Indiana did, right, wrong, or indifferent, the reaction that's come in, I think it's wrong. 100% wrong.
Yeah, after looking at the map and really kind of studying it and the mentality behind it, I don't think that we should change our rules. They were in place for a reason.
Yep. And that's just the thing. We have rules on redrawing the maps. This will come up in another 4.5 years, 2030. It's a census year. That's when the maps look to change.
Absolutely.
Stick to the schedule. I don't know. It was interesting. That was in the news a lot, especially the second part of the week. That vote happened on Thursday. The other things that happened this week, USDA finally announcing, what was it Thursday? Must have been a lot of things that happened. The $12 billion, when did that come out?
Oh, I believe that was Wednesday.
Maybe it was Wednesday.
Wednesday or Thursday.
So $12 billion, Charlie. I know you've got your money spent already.
Oh, you bet. Yeah, I got lots of repairs to make.
So the USDA announces finally, they're calling it a bridge program payment, Charlie. I assume bridge meaning the fact that the trade war dropped prices this past crop year. The trade war, they feel, is going to fix everything for next year. And so we've got this loss of income in here in the middle that we have to bridge that income gap. I assume that's why they're calling it that. $12 billion, but very few details on how it gets calculated. And I'll start with this question to you. What have you heard? Rumor or otherwise, what have you heard?
It sounded to me, and I have not had a chance to confirm, but it was just pure rumor that it's a dollar amount per acre, flat fee, nothing.
So if it's a dollar per acre, that means you get a...
That's laughable.
Yeah, exactly. Why bother? Why even cut that check? But if it's a dollar amount per acre, meaning that could be what back in the 2018-19 period, the last trade war we had, I'm trying to think back. I think that was $22, $25 an acre, if my mind serves me correctly, somewhere in there.
It's been a while.
It's been a minute, so I don't know. I had heard potentially dollars and cents per bushel. And then that would change based on commodity. So soybeans, the idea being soybeans get hurt harder in a trade war with China, a tariff tiff with China. So soybean payment would be higher. Corn also hurt, but not nearly as bad as soybeans. So that dollar amount differs, which would make the corn guys scream. But there's no data, no idea at all. The only thing we've been told is that the money is not going to come until February is what I heard. I don't know if you heard anything different, but February-ish. But we are supposed to know what the calculation is for your operation, my operation, everybody else's operation by the end of this month. Do you believe that?
No.
I don't believe it. I mean, because this is the week before the week of Christmas. So our next episode, by the way, Santa's going to visit next week on the podcast, so make sure you're prepared. Santa's going to be coming. He's bringing gifts.
Oh, is he?
Side note, there is a whole bunch of stuff going around with AI, and this is one of the few AI things I can support. AI redoing songs in different formats. So I heard Santa Claus is Coming to Town to the tune of and in the style of and in the voice of Radiohead, Creep.
Oh, boy.
So one of the line was, Santa Claus is coming to town. What the hell is he doing here? He doesn't belong here. Ooh, ooh. So anyway, look that up and give that a listen. That was pretty cool. A Radiohead creep, Santa Claus is coming to town. But we've got Christmas next week. The mm-hmm. week following New Year's, USDA offices are not going to be heavily staffed. I mean, it's the time of year.
I think half of them are on vacation, aren't they?
Well, they are. Well, usually they would be. Now, the only way this is different is if, again, they didn't work for, they had Christmas vacation back in October.
Absolutely.
Okay. Now, if any of you NRCS, USDA folks are listening, I am making fun of you. Yes, I know you didn't get paid, so it wasn't Christmas vacation, but maybe that does change things. Being off so much, they may be limiting vacation time at USDA. I don't know, but it seems to me that it's going to be very difficult to get something out here that we can actually do something with and truly understand, because anytime there's a program, not only is there a program, there's a comment period, there is a stack of data that has to come along with it and worksheets to fill out whether your AGI is here and what you get. I don't think they get that all around by the end of the month.
I think it's too much information to try and gather and develop a game plan.
I mean, it's the 15th. We're halfway through the month already. And they just announced this past week. So, I don't know. Like I said, I know you already spent the money. I have not. I'm a good boy. I haven't spent my money that I don't have yet.
Well, I got big machines to play with.
Well, get smaller machines.
Well, yeah, point there. We're going to need smaller ones getting across this mud.
Yeah, you probably need to. Do you got the boat out yet to put the header on?
We were thinking about that. Get out the pontoon boat. Yeah. And
or, you know, those guys down in Louisiana, they got those what?
Airboats?
Airboats. Airboats that they do across. Now, you got a couple fields that those would probably work pretty good on right now.
You're right. Yes, we do. Thank God they were soybeans and they're harvested right now.
Yeah, yeah. So $12 billion coming out of USDA. Stay tuned. When we get Charlie and I promise you we will go through the math ourselves here on the podcast, kind of walk you through it, what we see and what's interesting. One of the interesting things is of the $12 billion, $1 billion of that is earmarked for specialty crops. And I know you grow a lot of those, Charlie. You're captain specialty crop over there.
Absolutely.
So $1 billion for specialty crops, that's going to be interesting. But once we get the math, we'll kind of work through it. The other thing USDA did this past week is nothing. The WASDE report came out on Tuesday. Absolutely nothing in that report on the part of soybeans. So this, I think, in terms of beans, well, all crops, sets up for a blockbuster January data dump that happens there with the final crop production report, quarterly stocks, small grains reports, all of that stuff, WASDE, all four of those coming out there in January. But I want to talk corn a little bit. We'll get to beans when we talk about the January report here. But I want to talk corn a little bit. You're still harvesting. We've talked about some harvest going on. We still have a few acres out in the field to the northeast of Fort Wayne. And several other folks have kind of chimed in and let me know where they're at. There is some still corn out there. But this past Tuesday in the WASDE report, USDA did bump exports again on corn. We continue to get flash sales on corn. Mexico, South Korea, Japan, even some Chinese business on corn in there. And so they bumped exports 125 million bushels. And Charlie, what that did is now we have our carryout on corn, 25-26 corn, all the way down at 2.029 billion bushels. We are within a stone's throw of being under 2 billion. And if they drop yield, which they did not do on this last report, nobody thought they would, but if they drop yield down to about 185, which is probably where it should be, 184, 185, and if they cut harvested acres at all, which they should do, because there's no way we planted 98 million bushels. You said so yourself. If they cut the harvested acres, Charlie, at 1.8 billion bushel carryout, there's a story here on corn.
There, I really think that there's a lot of upside potential in corn. Recently, we sold a bunch of corn just to make cash flow and all that stuff.
Well, you needed to clear out some space to put still what you're harvesting, too.
Yeah, we had to clear space out. There was absolutely no doubt in my mind. And so we moved some corn this past week, and we got Well, we basically filled our contracts that we've had sitting on now for a year. But I really think there's going to be some upside potential here going into next year, because I don't think everybody has the yields that they're saying out there.
Well, but I go back. You've brought that up before, and I hear you. But then you're sitting here talking about what you're yielding.
You're right.
And how all I have to ask you is, all right, if how many out of every 10 farmers, I mean, is it 2 out of 10 with yields like yours that offset the other 8? That's what I'm kind of wondering, because you, again, we've talked about it here. We know you threw the kitchen sink at it. You mentioned even on this podcast that the fungicide that you did midsummer.
Yep.
You know, so we know you threw the kitchen sink at you, and nobody's saying you just got lucky. You did what you needed to do to raise it, but how many other Huyans are there out there that offset some of the other yield losses that we've seen? That's a very pertinent question.
I don't think that there's a much out there as what we think we are out there, people that do that. I just don't think that. I think there's a lot of people that held back. Like I said, in July, usually normally we're right above, right by Plymouth Airport a lot.
Mm-hmm.
We're right in between EB with his planes. And I saw him spray one or two fields. That was it.
So,
and we haven't really seen much on the drone side of things take off.
Well, those drones are sneaky. They can sneak in under the radar, so to speak.
No doubt. Those drones are really sneaky. But I don't think that there's a lot of people utilizing them quite yet.
Okay. So if I said 184 for the final yield in January, are you taking overs or unders?
I'm thinking under.
You're taking unders on 184. See, honestly, I personally would say if 184 is the number, I'm taking overs. I think the number is probably closer to 185, which, to be clear, Charlie, again, that is down from the current numbers that they're using in their calculations right now.
Correct.
So 184 would be down, I think, 2.5 bushels of the acre. So to me, in my mind, the story for corn is going to be on the carryout number. It's going to be what kind of cut happens to harvested acres. What kind of harvested acre number do we end up with? That's to me where the corn market is. I agree with you. I think there's upside potential to corn. Am I bullish corn, like flat out bullish? No. Yeah, I don't think we run to $5, 5.25, and stay there. I don't. But I'm definitely not looking for corn to puke at this point in time either.
And I would agree. We're out there making contracts now, out there a year out, trying to lock in next fall's numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not shooting for the moon here. We're not seeing $5 corn for next December by any means. But we're looking for those opportunities. But, you know, we were pretty doggone close. We need made some 480 contracts.
Yeah, hey, that'll work. And if you get some basis help, I mean, we've seen some corn basis do some squirrely things here as of late. So next year they could do the same thing.
Is that perfect? Not sure, but you know what? I can make that work.
Well, yeah, you'll be in business the year after.
Right.
Yeah. Let's talk beans a little bit, because, again, no changes in the WASDE report this last week on beans, and that ties into the last story. I'm using bunny ears here. Story, if you will, that we want to kind of cover this week, and that is China and soybeans. No changes on the bean side of things, no changes in yield, no changes in acres, no changes in demand. Still running along right now with a 290 million bushel carryout on soybeans, and an export number of still 1.695 billion bushels. Now, Charlie, again, we've talked on this podcast multiple times about the lack of buying that the Chinese did during our fall harvest season, and it amounted to 450 million bushels. Then we had the 12 million metric ton promise by China that seemed like it was going very, very slow. But, you know, this past week, the Chinese state trading enterprises opened up and got involved. COFCO bought some beans and actually sold some at auction. Sinograin opened up at an auction and actually released a lot of the stocks that they had on hand into the Chinese marketplace. And it sounds like both those state trading enterprises then came in and bought more beans out of the U.S. to refill stockpiles. So quietly, I'm hearing, or I've read, we could be, as of right now, as we start this week, 7 million metric tons purchased by China out of the 12 that they said that they would by the end of the year, or January or February, whatever the deadline is. My back of the envelope math is a lot less than that, as I just kind of keep track of flash sales and all that. But let's just say, Charlie, that it's 7 million metric tons that they've bought so far. How many million of the bushels of that do you think covers the 400 million bushels they didn't buy this past fall?
It doesn't go very far.
No, it's zero. Yeah. We still lost what they normally buy. They may be trying to catch up some here, but the idea is, in my mind, I think that in the January report, there is going to have to be a massive change in all sorts of different things on soybeans. On corn, what do we talk about? Harvested acres and yield. Bada bing, bada boom, bada bing. But on beans, we still have to talk yield. Is it good? As good as they thought? Better than they thought? Worse than they thought? Acres won't change. The soybean acres won't change at all. But what happens to the demand side of the equation? What does USDA print? Right now, I think that the carryout has to be with a reduction in exports at least of 100 to 150 million bushels. Remember, they didn't buy 4 to 450 million back in the fall. Let's just say they catch up some, but you still have to reduce exports by 150 million bushels, and you can't really make up for it in crush right now yet because there's not any new crush plants that are coming on just yet. Charlie, my argument is that carryout on soybeans has to be a lot closer to 400 million bushels than 290.
And I think you're right. I think China's going, yeah, we'll buy what we bought normally, but it's not going to be right now. I think it's going to be later in the year when it's more optimistic.
June, July, June. August.
Yep.
After time. The gut slot of South American harvest is done.
After it's done, they know what they got. And you know, like you mentioned on the podcast last week, hey, we're a couple of weeks away from Brazil starting to harvest their early beans.
So. And their beans are still cheaper than us. Didn't you say you heard they still have a pile of last year's crop sitting down there?
There's a pile of last year's crop sitting there. They're almost darn near a dollar cheaper than us. Mm-hmm. So why would China come and buy from us? They're not that nice.
Oh, I know some nice Chinese folks.
I don't think
they make good wontons.
But we're not talking about local Chinese.
Okay. All right. Now, I think you're right. And here, let's get back to the crux of the matter, which is, if I'm right, or even if I'm close to right, if the carryout goes to 375 or 400 or 410 million bushels, Charlie, does that support a 1090 futures price, an $11 future price?
I don't think so.
Absolutely not. I do think that this Chinese agreement, which isn't signed yet.
I noticed that too. There's, at the end of the day, this is not signed.
Yeah, this is goodwill at this point. But even if it is signed, you know, a 25 million metric ton purchase order for next year and the year following, that puts a floor under the market. Again, so don't get me wrong. I'm not Captain Bear here expecting the market to just free fall. I'm just saying I think we had our opportunity to sell $11.50 beans. That opportunity was a couple of months ago. I think we had our opportunity to sell 11.25 November futures for next year's crop. I think we've had our fun. I think we now have to sit back and wait for what opportunities come going forward, whether it's in January after the report or whether it's closer to the World Outlook Board Forum for February or the prospective plantings report, those surveys where USDA asks you what you're going to plant and you completely lie and make up all sorts of things.
How'd you know that?
So here's what I want you to do. No, Charlie, I want you to do us a favor. And we're going to talk about this in real time. When you get your survey from USDA in March, I want you to let us know. We're going to fill it out live on the podcast here. And I am going to coach you on your answers. And we are going to see what happens when Huyen, Huyen Farms fills out their USDA survey and suggests that they are going to change 250 acres to upland cotton this year, and also is going to put in a 40-acre plot of peanuts. And we're going to put some things on here and see what happens. This is going to be a long-term research project. We're going to see whether that actually gets reported and it's in the statistics when it's done.
Oh, that would be fun.
Because we get those. When those surveys come out, it says, well, they're Indiana farmers are planting such and such. And I want to see if we move the needle. But also then, I want to follow it in years following to see whether you actually get sent a survey again.
Here we go. We're going to be planting cotton.
Upland cotton, Bremen, Indiana. Watch for it. Look, if you want to do it, I know how to do it. I know how to get it. What you got to do is the greenhouse out here. We're going to have to get some heat in it, and we're going to have to create plugs. We're going to have to start the seed in late February and get you transplantable things, and you'll just have to be a transplant machine, and you guys just put them in the ground like they do tomatoes.
Oh, there we go.
Tomatoes. And if you put that in the ground, we've proven it. My wife has proven it at the garden that she works at, Warsaw Biblical Gardens, downtown Warsaw, Indiana. She's grown cotton the last 2 years, and it's reached the bowl stage. So it can be done if you start the seeds early, have the plants, and then put them in the ground after the last frost year when the temperatures are climbing. It can be done. Huyen Grain Farms growing cotton next year. Mark it down.
There we go.
All right. Finishing up with then, what do we see in January? I think we have to watch the January report very, very close, because if there are not acreage changes on corn, if they don't do what they should do on exports on beans, I think the quarterly grain stocks report then fast forward all the way to the end of next September. That September 1 grain stocks report is going to be very wild and crazy, because if they don't make good on what numbers truly are and give us realistic numbers in January, September of 2026 is going to be a time frame where we see a huge reset, a shuffling of bushels going back and going, oh, we found 400 million bushels of demand, and so we have to shoot that. Or, no, we lost 300 million bushels of corn. It's just not there. And they reset the balance sheet. They find or lose bushels and then tie it back to last year's crop or even 2 years ago's crop to try and make their sheets manageable. So that's what I'm looking at to see what happens in January. Honestly, if I'm looking at it from a pure trading perspective, I'm going to have ideas on what kind of strategies I want to put on third quarter of 2026 based on what USDA does in January. Charlie, I think that January report is going to be, as my kids would say, it's going to be fire.
It's going to be fire?
It's going to be fire.
Oh, boy.
I'm not sure whether that's good or bad, but it's something. It's going to be fire.
It's going to be fun.
I'll
have to ask my boys about that.
Yeah, ask them if the report's going to be fire.
I knew I should have brought Matthew with me today.
Well, you know, honestly, if we'd have brought him this week, he'd be asleep in the corner. That's a comfortable chair.
You got a point there.
He'd be asleep in the corner. So, what else went on this past week? Anything exciting that we didn't miss, didn't chat about?
Oh, just the usual repairs, the surprise repairs.
Surprise repairs.
Like the one on Saturday morning.
Okay.
God bless us. Dad was out there working late Friday.
Because it didn't start snowing Saturday till noon, right? 1 o'clock. You could have been running.
We could have, and we did a little.
Okay.
Until we found out that big, heavy chain at the top of the unload auger broke Friday night late. And I will say that I had the extra stealthy, heavy-duty long underwear on,
mm-hmm,
climbing up that grain bin. And
it was a little bit cold that night, wasn't it?
Yeah, Ryan Martin was forecast was correct. It was very cold out there on top of that grain bin with that stout westerly wind.
Oh, gosh, those winds were tough. That was tough.
Facing you right in the face.
Yeah.
Putting on this 100 chain on that top of that wonderful auger.
Yeah. But you got it done, right?
We got her done. I still have my fingers, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're still attached.
They're not black. So, at this point, at this stage of the game, if they would have gotten, you'd be in trouble if they were black, and they're not black, so you're all right. Mm-hmm. So, Well, weather, speaking of that, I mean, wasn't going to talk much weather today, but just to kind of make you know where you sit with your remaining corn acres to go, Mother Nature showing her bipolarness this week. Or we could put it this way. If we want to keep ripping on Notre Dame, we can say winter pulling a Notre Dame this week, pissed off and just said, I'm going to take my ball and go home and let spring have it again.
Oh, there we go.
But we are going to be seeing a massive warm surge here this week. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, I'm expecting highs to climb dramatically, easily in the 40s, even maybe some upper 40s on Thursday. That's going to create massive snow melt. We saw a lot of snow melt last week. You even texted me in the middle of the week and pointing out how much snow has been melting. I think it's all gone this week by Thursday, and we're going to put probably a quarter to 1 inch of rain on top of that. So you've got a muddy mess out there. Make sure that track machine is ready to go.
Well, that's another issue.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll keep the track machine in our prayers for you. But we get cold again for Friday and early Saturday behind it. And then, Charlie, I know who in your family really wants a white Christmas? Do you have a white Christmas family, or do you have a we could care less family?
Right now, it's like, let's get the harvest done, family.
Okay. All right. So white Christmas family, you don't care. I know a lot of people this time of year, you know, just whether it's the Bing Crosby white Christmas song or whatever, you want to know if you got a white Christmas. If you want a white Christmas, you should go ahead and start making plans now to move your tree to your nearest Walmart, because the only place there will be a white Christmas is near the Walmart snow piles that will be left. And, of course, by then, they're probably going to be black snow piles. So I think it's going to be very difficult to have a white Christmas here, because after cooling off a little bit late this week into the early weekend, warm air is back for Sunday and all the way through next week. As a matter of fact, Charlie, I think we could have rain on Christmas Day, Christmas morning, waking up to open the stockings to some nice gentle rain falling on the eaves.
Oh, that's not good, because I really was hoping for skiing on Christmas.
Well, yeah, I know that you were trying to have the ski passes bail you out because you haven't done your shopping yet.
Right, right.
And I'm just here to tell you, you're in trouble.
Uh-oh.
You're in trouble. So that's what we've got for you this week. Remember, the podcast brought to you by Mac America Ag Finance, the Northern Indiana office, once again, offering quick answers on financing. An express loan application can get you a yes or a no, I suppose, but hopefully a yes in 24 to 48 hours on up to $3 million worth of financing for agricultural purposes. We're talking land or infrastructure. Also have some stuff we can talk about on operating lines, they tell us. So give the Northern Indiana office a call, 574-253-3433. Thanks again to them for sponsoring the podcast. And thanks again to the Hoosier Ag Today Podcast Network for picking us up here. Great to work with these folks. Make sure you check out other podcasts on the network there, and continue to like and subscribe this podcast. Share it with your friends. Charlie, it's been great to have you here again. Good luck. The end is in sight, buddy.
We're going to go.
The weather may not be perfect for you, but it would be so nice to be able to say on December 24th, Merry Christmas to the family, and not have to worry about hopping in anything the next day.
Well, we're going to be putting on the muck boots this week.
Well, I'll have an extra pair I can send with you if you want.
Oh, there we go.
But I'm not coming out there. I sink stuff too fast in my own muck. I don't need to go play in yours. So, great to see you here again. And folks, the next episode of the Little Red Barn podcast drops in 1 week. It's on all of your podcast listening devices. Make sure you like, subscribe, and send it along. Until then, have a great week. Gear up for Christmas. Get that shopping done. Last-minute gift ideas. Hey, give a subscription to the Little Red Barn. Why not?
It's cheap.
It is cheap. Very cheap. If you're on a budget, that's what works. Just tell everybody to listen. Have a great one, folks. He's Charlie. I'm Ryan. This is the Little Red Barn.